Here's a scenario I want you to sit with for a second. It's a Saturday afternoon. You filed VFR to your destination, about 2 hours away. The weather when you departed was acceptable. 500.5 isn't exactly great. But the terminal forecast called for improving conditions by noon, and noon was close. You told yourself you'd check again at your first fuel stop. At the fuel stop, you check the automated weather at your destination. Ceiling is 300 overcast, not legal, not close, but your destination is still reporting 600, and the trend line looks like it might be improving. You've come this far. Your family is waiting. There's a tea time, the rental car is at the other airport. You've already paid for the hotel. So you go. That is not a hypothetical, that is the accident chain for dozens of reports filed with the National Transportation Safety Board every single year. And the thing that drives that chain has a name. Continuation bias, I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar, and today I want to talk about what I believe is the single most dangerous thing that happens inside a pilot's head, and why knowing about it doesn't automatically protect you from it. That part is the part nobody talks about enough. Before we get into it, a quick word for AviationSoul.com, who keep the lights on around here. They make challenge coins for every step of the flying journey. First solo private pilot certificate, instrument rating, commercial, there is a coin for each one. When training gets hard, and it will get hard, it helps to have something in your hand that says you have already beaten hard before. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. Alright, let's talk about what continuation bias actually is. Continuation bias is the tendency to keep going on a planned course of action, even as evidence accumulates that you should stop, turn around, or change the plan entirely. Researchers in aeronautical decision-making, that's the field of cognitive science that looks at how pilots think under pressure, have documented this pattern across hundreds of accident cases. The finding is consistent. Once a pilot commits to a plan, they begin unconsciously filtering incoming information in a way that confirms the plan, rather than challenges it. The Federal Aviation Administration's Aeronautical Decision-Making Advisory Circular describes this as a form of plan continuation error, and it shows up in accidents covering everything from fuel exhaustion to controlled flight into terrain to VFR into IMC. A study by the FAA Civil Aerospace Medical Institute found that plan continuation error was a causal or contributing factor in a significant majority of approach and landing accidents it examined. Not mechanical failure, not sudden catastrophic weather. The decision, the human decision to keep going, is what put those airplanes into the ground. So, what makes this so dangerous? Here's the part that I think should keep you up at night. Continuation bias doesn't feel like a mistake while you're making it. It feels like confidence, it feels like commitment, it feels, in the moment, like the right call. Here is the psychology behind it. When you file a flight plan, brief the weather, pre-flight the airplane, load up your passengers, taxi out, run up and depart. You have made an investment, a psychological investment. Every step you take increases what researchers call sunk cost pressure. The further you get into the flight, the more your brain resists abandoning what it started. This is not unique to pilots. This is how human cognition works. Evolution didn't build us to be comfortable walking away from things we started. It built us to finish. Layered on top of that sunk cost pressure is something called plan continuation tunnel vision. As conditions deteriorate during a flight, the pilot's mental focus narrows. They stop evaluating the full picture. Weather at alternates, fuel remaining, terrain under the route, time to a decision point, and they start fixating on the destination. The goal, the plan. The brain is still processing information, but it's discounting anything that says turn around and waiting anything that says keep going. Here's the thing that I need you to understand. This is not a student pilot problem. This is not a low hours problem. Some of the most haunting continuation bias accidents on record involve pilots with thousands of logged hours and years of experience. Experience, in fact, can make it worse. An experienced pilot has more evidence in their personal history of times they pressed through marginal conditions and it worked out fine. That history becomes a psychological justification. I've done this before, I'll be okay. Until they aren't. Now, let me give you the tools that actually work against continuation bias, because awareness alone is not enough. I want you walking away from this segment with something concrete. The first tool is what I call the gate system. Before you fly, you establish go-no-go gates at specific points along your route. Not just a pre-flight go-no-go decision, but checkpoints during the flight. A gate might look like this. If I reach the midpoint of this flight and my destination is reporting less than a 1,500-foot ceiling with visibility below 5 miles, I am diverting to my alternate period. no discussion, no further evaluation in the cockpit. Why does this work? Because you make the decision on the ground before you take off, when the sunk cost pressure hasn't had time to build. You make the decision when you are calm, rested, and not in the middle of managing an airplane. You write it down, you tell your passenger you commit to it. In flight, under pressure, is the absolute worst time to make a fresh decision about whether to continue. So don't. Make it early, make it clear, and then honor it. The second tool is a reframe question. You ask yourself, if this were the beginning of the trip and not the end, would I still depart? That question strips away the sunk cost. If the weather at your destination right now at this very moment would cause you to say no on pre-flight at your home field, then it should cause you to say no in the airplane too. The only variable that changes when you use this reframe is the psychological one. The weather doesn't change, the risk doesn't change, your investment does, but your investment is not a factor in the safety analysis. The third tool is what I call the 30% degraded scenario. If you're looking at borderline conditions, ask yourself, what if conditions are 30% worse than what I'm seeing right now? Would I still go? Because the weather forecast is not a guarantee. The ATIS you're looking at is a snapshot, not a trend line. The ceiling that's 600 right now was 820 minutes ago. That means something. If your honest answer is that 30% worse makes this a no-go, you've just identified your real margin, and you're sitting right on the edge of it. Now let's connect this to what the examiner is actually looking for on your check ride, because this is traffic pattern and we always come back to the practical. The Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate weave aeronautical decision-making throughout the entire document. It's not a separate section you flip to, it's embedded in every task area. The evaluator is watching how you think, not just how you fly. And one of the most common ways student pilots stumble on the oral exam is not a regulation question or a weight and balance calculation, it's a scenario. The examiner presents something like this. You're en route on a cross-country, destination weather has dropped below VFR minimums, your planned alternate is reporting marginal visual conditions, and your fuel state is adequate but not generous. What do you do? The wrong answer is any version of I'll push through because it might improve. The right answer walks through the options, identifies the conservative course of action, demonstrates that you understand the pilot in command has options beyond the original destination, and shows the examiner that you are making the decision rather than letting the situation make it for you. That's what the ACS is testing. Aeronautical decision-making under pressure, even simulated pressure, reveals how a pilot actually thinks. Let me build you a more detailed scenario and walk through it step by step, because I think the scenario method is the best way to build these instincts. You are a private pilot student on a solo cross-country, 60-hour requirement check complete, endorsement in hand. You're flying a Cessna 172 from your home field to a destination 90 miles to the east. Your route takes you over rising terrain in the middle section with limited landing options for a stretch of about 40 miles. You departed with VFR conditions at both ends and a slight chance of afternoon convective activity in the area forecast. An hour into the flight, you start seeing cumulus buildups to your southeast. They're not directly on your route yet, but they are growing vertically, and they have that hard, cauliflower look that says the atmosphere is energized today. Your destination's automated weather is now reporting a 1,000-foot broken ceiling with 8 miles visibility. Still VFR, still legal, but when you checked 20 minutes ago, it was 2,500 broken. That's a 1,500-foot drop in 20 minutes. This is a gate question. This is exactly when your pre-departure gate comes into play. Your first check is immediate. Can you right now maintain visual flight rules? Can you see the ground, maintain cloud clearance of 500 feet below, 1,000 above, and 2,000 horizontal? If the answer to that is no, you are already in violation and the decision is made for you. Divert immediately to the nearest suitable airport. If you can still maintain VFR, you move to the next check. What is the weather doing and where is it going? A 1,500-foot ceiling drop in 20 minutes is a trend. Trends in aviation almost never reverse quickly. The situation is almost certainly going to be worse at your destination when you get there than it is right now. What will it be reporting in another 30 minutes? You may not know exactly, but you can make a reasonable estimate based on the trend, and that estimate should be conservative, not optimistic. Next check, what is your alternate? Have you actually looked at the weather at your alternate in the last half hour? Do you have the fuel to get to your alternate plus your required reserves? If your alternate is also showing deteriorating conditions, you may need to commit to landing somewhere sooner rather than later while you still have good weather under you. And finally, what is the convective activity doing? Cumulus that is growing to your southeast while you're flying east could be on an intercept course with your route. This is the kind of situational picture that requires you to have an out before you need it, not after. The right decision in this scenario is almost certainly to land now, not at your original destination. At the nearest airport with good weather and enough fuel access to give you options, you call flight service or use 4Flight or whatever weather tool you have on board, you get an updated picture, you make a call to your CFI or your home field if you need support, and you put the airplane on the ground while the pudding is good. Here is something I wish someone had told me when I was training. The decision to divert is never a failure, it is not weakness, it is not a reflection of your skills as a pilot, it is exactly the right decision, made at exactly the right time, that separates a pilot who will fly for 50 years from an NTSB statistic. The board does not write accident reports about pilots who landed at alternates, they write them about pilots who didn't. There is also a broader habit I want you to build, and it applies to every phase of training and every flight you will ever take. File the flight plan. File the VFR flight plan. Every time, even when you think you will not need it. Because if you do make a good divert decision and land somewhere unexpected, you want people to know where you are. The FAA search and rescue system activates when you're overdue, but only if someone knows where you were supposed to be. The FAA's Decide model gives you a framework when things start changing on you. Detect the change. Estimate the significance. Choose among the available alternatives. Identify the best alternative. Do it. Evaluate the outcome. It's a structured way to think when the situation is pressuring you to stop thinking and just keep going. But here is the honest truth about continuation bias that the models don't fully capture. The model only helps if you're willing to use it. The pilot who is deep in planned continuation tunnel vision, committed to the destination, already rationalizing the deteriorating conditions. That pilot isn't going to stop and run through a cognitive framework. That pilot is going to keep flying. The protection against that is not a checklist. It's a decision made before takeoff, locked in and non-negotiable, that removes the in-flight deliberation entirely. It's the gate. It's the commitment made on the ground when the sunk cost was zero and the thinking was clear. Fly for long enough and you will have a flight where continuation bias tries to get into the cockpit with you. The weather will be worse than forecast. The fuel will be tighter than planned. The passengers will be asking how much longer. The rental car will be at the other airport. When that moment comes, I want you to hear this. The airplane doesn't care about the rental car. The mountain doesn't care about the hotel reservation. The weather system doesn't know about the tee time. There is only the pilot, the airplane, and the decision about what happens next. Make the decision your passengers need you to make, even if it's not the one they want. Source information for today's segment comes from the FAA Aeronautical Decision-Making Advisory, Circular NTSB Accident Data, and research from the FAA, Civil Aerospace Medical Institute. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. See you next time.